is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob and Dave on 710 ESPN Seattle. I'm not sure where Moore is. He's wandering aimlessly around the building talking to people. Hi, Jim. I'm waving to him right now. He's just in the newsroom just talking. We're on the air. It's okay. There's a show. Hey, opening drive brought to you by Cherish. Big show coming up today. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we've got, of course, the Professor John Clayton will join us, as he does every day. At 5 o'clock, Danny Kelly from The Ringer wrote a good piece on the Seattle Seahawks, just sort of summarizing what he thought some of the pluses and minuses were of the season, what they should do with the draft, who were, you know, free agents, kind of touching on all of it. So we'll talk to Danny Kelly coming up at 5 o'clock and get his take on everything going on. Meanwhile, this news broke yesterday toward the end of the show. Luke Kuechly calling it a career. Hi, Jim. Welcome.
Hey, Bob. How are you? Hi, Dave.
Good, man.
Hello.
But that happened in the middle of the show, and we're just kind of like, whoa, that was just kind of out of nowhere. 28 years old, says, hey, I can't do it at the level that I feel like I should be able to do it anymore, and decided that was it. Didn't mention concussions or anything. I think everybody, you know, even on the crawl on ESPN, said he's suffered, I can't remember the number, 6 concussions in his career, whatever the number was. Like, everybody's assuming right. That's the, and maybe it is the issue, but it was, you know, it was amazing to see that at that age. But as you pointed out, Dave, you were looking at some of the names of people that have called it a career at a young age. It's becoming more and more a reality in this league that guys are, I think, A, they're making a lot more money,
yeah,
so they can look at it and go, you know what, I'm fine for the rest of my life. If you're not a knucklehead with your money, mm-hmm. you've made lifetime worth of money if you've handled it right at the age of 28 or 29 or 30, some of these guys, so they can make a decision that maybe guys when you played before you would look at it and go, well, if I quit now, what am I going to do, because I don't have lifetime money now.
Yeah, well, and some guys lose that perspective, and I'll tell you a story about that. Shannon Sharp, I remember at the end of his career, you know, just being thinking that, yeah, I'm going to go on making this amount of money. You know, I'm quite sure I can make $250,000 a year outside of football. And I was like, oh, yeah, right. He's probably making like $6 million now.
He's probably making more than he did in football.
Yeah, more than he ever did. But, yeah, for most of us, you go into a different. So there's there is the money thing, and I don't know how much of that comes into it, but I would think a fair amount, wouldn't you? Because I mean, look, back in the day, it was like
it'd make the decision easier.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you could figure out plus, pretty sure these guys still get a pretty healthy severance. You know, so it's just at the end of your career, you accrue severance years, and so there's enough to carry you. Well, I don't know how far now, but back then it used to be for like a year and a half, you know, that amount. You were on their medical plan for a year after. And so, yeah, you can kind of figure out what you want to do and where you want to go. I guess I'm assuming Luke Kuechly, don't know him really well, but didn't he always seem like a guy that loved playing football?
Oh, yeah.
So, and that's the thing I think is the hardest. And when you get on the outside, and I think Marshawn had that same kind of glimpse, you know, where he got on the outside and realized, hey, that was really fun. I was enjoying it, and you make a good amount of money. And if you're Marshawn, you don't want to go into the media or anything like that. You know, that's for sure.
He could.
I don't know.
People would be watching that. Marshawn Lynch?
He would start a whole new, what do you call it, vernacular of, words and chicken and mentals and whatnot.
And he would turn it all into shirts.
They got the T-shirts out
already. Yeah, he's smart that really, way. Yeah, he's a marketing guy.
But, you know, I just started thinking about, because, like, 2019, Luke Kuechly, obviously, Rob Gronkowski last year, Andrew Luck last year. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, that was another surprising one where you went, whoa, where did that come from?
Well, and then they also had Doug Baldwin on the list. And what did Doug play, 8 years?
I have to look. Yeah. 7 or 8, yeah.
Well, The point, I guess, with him is he had more, you know, gas in the tank. But Cam Chancellor, I mean, to me, that one doesn't even belong on that list, because that was a medical thing. Like, remember Max Strong? In 2007, I think it was? Maybe it was 8.
He had a neck thing, right?
Yeah, he had a neck thing, man. And that's like, and Mac had played like 15 years, more than that, actually. He came in 93. I'll never forget Mac. He showed up to the Seahawks, and I went to the camp, even though I wasn't playing on that team. In 1993, I went to camp with the Seahawks because I hadn't signed a free agent contract. And he showed up with a plastic bag with tape around the top of it. That was his suitcase.
So good.
Yeah.
8 years for Baldwin, by the way.
Eight?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Mac was 15 years?
Something like that, wasn't he?
Wow.
Yeah, I think maybe even longer. I'll look it up in a second. But, man, you know, that was a different story. And Cam Chancellor, same thing. But, you know, and Patrick Lewis.
Cliff Averill was a guy that.
Yeah, exactly.
Injury knocks your career out.
Right. And then the one in 2014 that was kind of the most noticeable was that Chris Borland guy, the linebacker for San Francisco. And,
was that 1 or 2 years that he played?
I think it was 2 or 3, maybe.
Not many,
because he filled in for, was it Patrick Willis?
Yeah. And
somebody
he played
got
really
hurt.
Well.
Yeah, and everybody was raving about, man, this kid.
Yeah,
it didn't miss a beat, and you, I can't remember if it was Navarro Bowman or Willis. Who he filled in for somebody and kind of caught everybody's eye.
Well, right.
And then just out of what felt like out of nowhere, I'm done.
Yeah, he was proactive with it, and Willis is another guy on this list too. He quit at the age of 30 in 2015. So yeah, it's a growing trend here, and
you think these decisions would have been made just as recently as Dave's era? I mean, I think the financial element is huge in this. I think the ability to say, you know what, I've made enough money. I'm going to be fine financially. Yeah, I love the game, but it's not worth me assuming more risk, whether it's trauma to the head, a shoulder, whatever was going on with Andrew Luck. I mean, everybody's got different injuries. Cliff was a neck. I think Cam was a neck, too. Wasn't
yeah,
he
was.
Yeah, so you're talking about potential paralysis.
Right.
I mean, is it even worth it when you've got – presumably money to last you the rest of your life. I understand the decision, whereas when you were playing, it's a different consideration.
Right. Well, and that's why I always kind of defend the guys that took steroids then, because those were typically backup offensive linemen that couldn't keep weight on, and they just wanted to get one more year in the league or two. I remember specifically there was a guy in Denver, and he had a wife. He'd been married for like 5 years. He got married in college. He had kids, you know, and he was a backup lineman, and he said, yeah, I took him because I needed to keep weight on and everything. So it was just a totally different deal. By the way, Max Strong, 14 years.
You were way off.
Yeah. But you know, but on the same day, And I put this in the email, how do you explain in the same day or the day after, Larry Fitzgerald signs on for, what, a 17th year?
Yes.
You know, and you talk about a receiver taking hits, and he's, you know, he's only missed 6 games. And so for him, health, obviously not a concern. And, you know, and then same thing with, what about Frank Gore? I mean, how do you explain him? He's been getting beaten for the majority of his career.
This guy that blew out both of his knees before he was a pro.
Right. So
no sign of him retiring.
No.
Buffalo this year.
Yeah.
And just effective as the backup back there. And
destroyed his knees in college before he ever touched a pro NFL field. And to have the career he's had is unreal.
Yeah. And let's see. It looks like 15 years for Frank Gore. I mean, yeah, this will be his 16th year coming up. But it just kind of made me think a little bit about, are we going to start to see maybe more of this? Just because I think it's going to come out pretty clearly that Kuechly, you know, and there's so much more science now about the brain injury and everything. So, you know, for him, who is, I don't know what Kuechly's made, $40 million, $50 million, you know, and half of that, you know, if you've been wise with your money.
He's been taking care of his chicken.
He's been taking care of his
yes,
chicken.
Yes, he has.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that would definitely come into play there. But that's where I think also it's just more and more important to get guys that really love football. And I'm not saying Luke Kuechly didn't love football. And anyone that wants to retire, I'm with them. The only thing is I always think is
– I don't feel like you can relate.
Well, I can't relate to it. I can't. I mean,
feel like they'd have to take a shovel and scoop you off the field.
Well, they basically did that, Bob.
Like, get Wyman's helmet, throw it away, throw his jersey away. Yeah. He can't step onto the field again.
Yeah. Well, I missed all of 96, and I tried to come back and try out for 97 and just didn't make it and realized I wasn't going to get it.
Are you the anomaly, though? Do you feel like – I feel like yeah, there are more guys, especially these days with science progressing, knowledge – obviously people have access to much more information about injuries and the long-lasting effects. And again, financially, they're in a position to make those choices. But I don't know how many people are like – I think Earl is like you. I think you – where he's sat down with us and told me, I'm married to football. And he didn't say it with a smile or I'm trying to be, you know, funny.
He meant it.
Right. He meant it. And I think you guys are similar in that sense. But I think you guys are sort of outliers to a certain extent to where you're going to have to, I will tape myself together and go through whatever I have to go through to stay on this field. I don't care about the future. I'm about playing right now.
Yeah.
I think that's rare.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll see. We'll see if all of a sudden there's a flood of this happening. But, you know, I think that most guys get to this level because they love it so much. And I think there are some old school guys, and then there are some guys. Look, you know, I was thinking about, like, Bobby Wagner. You know, and every once in a while he'll get criticism for something. He makes over $1 million a game. So do you really care, and you know, about what people think about you? And then the other thing is that, you know, wouldn't that kind of change your mind a lot? I mean, I think that much money has to have an effect on somebody. But
like Bob is saying, it wouldn't have affected you.
No, and I was taped together and with baling wire and duct tape and everything. I played in the last game I played, needing knee surgery, and that was, you know, but that wasn't in the, you know, multi-million dollar days.
Yeah, do you think if you had made $50 million at that point in your career, would you have tried to come back the next year? Or do you think you'd been like, you know what, man? I'm not down for another knee surgery. I love the game, but I've got a fat nest egg here, and I'm fine.
I think I would have. I still would have tried to play just because I loved it. And you know that's all I did my whole life. I mean, from the time when I realized I was good enough to be, and there was a play I made in my freshman year where I thought, you know what? I think I can be a really good football player. So, you know, ever since that point, you know, that's all I knew. I mean, I went to Stanford because of football. And I remember I got a bunch of people coming around because I said, I came here to play football. I didn't come here for the education. And it was the Pac-10 Skyriders. They all came to each, you know, place.
Skyrider days.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they would come and there would be like a media day. And I sat up there and I said, that's what I said. I came here to play football. I didn't come here. And so afterwards, everybody came around me and were asking me all these questions about that. You know, that was just, you know, who I was. And I think if you talk to Trey Flowers and, you know, a guy like Cody Barton, and, you know, it's hard to predict which guys are going to just be totally in love with the game and be those kinds of guys. But, you know, I do think that no matter who you are, making that much money has to change you a little bit.
You know who I think is in that mold of you and Earl, just in terms of that devotion to the game, is Russell.
Yeah.
Russell says it. He said it in the interview after a game, after this last game where they lost, and he's like, I can't remember in what context it was, but basically saying, hey, listen, you know, I'm just now at this, we're just getting there, and I got another 10, 12 years left in me. You know, he's talking well into his 40s, you know.
He loves it. Brady says the same thing.
Yeah, he's married to somebody who makes more than he does. Money is not a concern for him.
Right.
Yeah. He's doing it because he loves the game. There's no financial aspect to him playing football. I'm sorry. Yeah, there's respect, and I want to be paid as much as others, but is it making a difference in his life, you know, 10 years from now? No. He's married to a woman who makes more than he does. Their combined income is ridiculous. So right. That's love of football there.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, Dave, back in your day, if they had known more about concussions then, even though the salaries were lower, would players have retired early the way they are now?
Yeah. I felt like I did because I went through, I think I mentioned it yesterday, my sophomore year. Junior year, maybe. No, it was my sophomore year. I had like 3 concussions in a row, and the doctors there were like, you can't go back out on the field. You know, and that's, you know, back in
like
the
3 games in a row, you mean? Or what?
It was like during a season. I got one in camp. I got one early on in, I think, the first game against Oklahoma. And then 3-4 games later, we played Arizona State. I got one, and they were like, yeah, you're gonna have to start sitting out. And then I went and played and didn't get any the rest of the year, so it was fine. But they were kind of aware of, but not nearly to the point that they are now. So, you know, another guy I'd throw on that list, and I remember Brock Huard saying this. Brock played with Peyton Manning, and I remember he said, I actually worry about him. This was 6 years ago. I worry about what he's going to do without football because his whole life is football. I mean, everything is. He comes home watching film and, you know.
4 neck surgeries.
Yeah. Yeah,
4
right.
neck surgeries.
And he'd
made all the money in
money,
the world.
Right?
I mean, yeah, between his salary and endorsements. Yeah, I mean, he had no reason to continue. He'd already won a Super Bowl prior to the neck surgeries. So, yeah, it's interesting to see that mentality. So is your fear that we're going to see that more often?
Well, I think this is an overreaction. I mean, like, this is one guy, right? And we're assuming that it's because of that. But, you know, how many players are in the NFL? 1,600, 1,700. And not everybody in the same situation as Luke Kuechly, obviously. But you do have a list here of over the last few years, going back to, you know, 2017, of, you know, 5 guys where – there was some injury there. And I think, obviously, you take Cam Chancellor out of it. But, you know, Andrew Luck, Rob Gronkowski, we don't know about Luke Kuechly, Doug Baldwin. I mean, would you say these guys had – and going back, Barry Sanders.
Yeah.
Was another guy that I thought still had some gas in the tank. Calvin Johnson is on that list, too, going back to 2015. So I think it's rare, but I just wonder if you're going to start to see more of that just because – and Gronkowski – he didn't have anything, right? Did he have injuries?
Yeah, he had all kinds of injuries. He had the elbow, he had a knee. I think his back was messed up.
He said he cried himself to sleep after the last Super Bowl because he was in so much pain.
Yeah, he had a lot of... I don't think his were concussions. I don't think his were concussions, although I don't know if we'd know the difference.
Or something in a bottle.
Well, I thought it was interesting that Kuechly, in his video retirement yesterday, in this soundbite that we have, he didn't really... referred to a concussion as being the reason.
Yeah, here's a couple of cuts from that. It was about a three and a half minute video, but here are a couple snippets from Luke Kuechly's video if you didn't hear any of this.
You know, there's only one way to play this game since I was a little kid is to play fast and play physical and play strong. And at this point, I don't know if I'm able to do that anymore. And that's the part that is the most difficult is I still want to play, but I don't think it's the right decision. So thought about it for a long time, and I think now is an opportunity for me to step away with what's going on here. I think we've got a really good linebacker room. I think Shaq and those guys are going to step and do a tremendous job.
And you can hear how tough it is for him. Yeah. Man. I mean, this is a guy who still loves to play the game. And according to texters, Adam Schefter tweeted he's made $65 million in his career.
Yeah.
So I think he'll be okay. He's not wondering where his next meal is coming from.
Right.
Yep, but he also mentioned things that you've mentioned too, Dave, about the camaraderie in the locker room. And
that's right here. Yeah. How about that,
Jim? I was setting you up there.
You're amazing, Jim. Yeah,
sitting right now in the linebacker room and the amount of memories I've had from this room alone could fill a book. And these are the best times of playing. Obviously, on the field is awesome, but some of the best times of playing this game are behind the scenes in the locker rooms, in these meeting rooms, on the buses, traveling the games. You can't replicate that anywhere else, and that's why this is so hard to do, to move on in a different direction. But in my heart, I know it's the right thing to do, and it's hard, but that's why you play this game to form relationships, and if you form strong relationships, they never go away.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I talked to a military guy that was driving the lift when I went to in Milwaukee or in Green Bay to go get my overcoat because I forgot my overcoat. Stop me if you've heard that story before.
Your trip to Kohl's.
Yeah, Kohl's. But he was kind of saying the same thing about the military, that you know, you're all access, you're all in, you're around the guys, there is a camaraderie, you know, you're doing the same things every day, there's a ritual, and then all of a sudden you're on the outside, you know, and it's like, I remember in Denver, they take your key card away, you can't get in the building anymore, and you can't be around the guys, and so what he said there, and you can't replicate, I mean, you can play and pick up basketball games if you want, right? I mean, you can go and play in a softball league, right, or you can shoot baskets or whatever, but there's just nothing that simulates the game. Mm-hmm. And it's just so intense and so much fun. And so that's what makes it such a difficult situation. But, you know, he's crying there. I mean, every player does that. John Elway, after winning, did he win two Super Bowl MVPs? I know he won mm-hmm. two Super Bowls back-to-back. He was up on the podium crying when he said, I realize I can't do it anymore. So, but for him, I mean, I think it's kind of a, no pun intended, no-brainer, because, look, he's had the concussions, and that's something you don't want to mess around with. And there's a lot of fear, and there's a lot of unknown as far as the human brain goes. And, you know, you don't know how much of an effect that's having. I had a pretty general good idea that smashing my head into 300-pound men
was
probably not a great idea, but there wasn't nearly the research then that there is now, and so I can totally understand that. But
well, and you now we've got so many examples of guys going the wrong, whether you're talking about Mike Webster, Junior Seau, or you know, Tyler Helinski, even at a college level, and they've looked at their brains and said, man, these guys have had the brain of a 60-year-old man, you know, in some cases.
In some ways.
You know, Andre Water, I mean, you can just go up and down the list of guys that have gone the wrong direction, and when they do the research, it's scary. I understand some of these guys, if they've had multiple concussions, going, you know what? What am I doing?
Yeah.
What am I doing?
Well, and I've gone on the record on that as just saying, look, I think that there's a lot of unknown there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, you know, and you know, if as far as like suicide and things like that, I mean, you have to throw in the money side of it. Danny used to always say, too, that that lessens the likelihood a lot of times. You know, if you have if you're financially secure and so you can't really put them into that group. But again, there's just so much unknown there that, you know, it's kind of scary. And I think people are getting, I mean, look at what the college and pro is they're doing with, you know, some of these penalties for, you know, hitting guys, making a football play. And so that's done out of fear mm-hmm. because they're afraid that it's going to, you know, something it's going to come back on them. So, and you know, and I said in my email the hypocrisy of me joining. I mean, I don't really believe, but I did enter the concussion settlement. But the reason why I did it is I think principally it doesn't sit well with me because I signed up for it mm-hmm. and I knew, but the way it was explained to me is that you would be stupid not to do it because it's already set aside.
Class action.
Yeah. Suit. The money has already been set aside. And so you're basically just saying that by principle, you don't want any of that. And what it might lead to for me down the road is, and some might say I need it now, but you know, long-term care for, you know, memory loss and things
well,
like
do you,
that.
Do you worry about that type of thing on a daily basis?
No, not at all. I don't. Would you tell me if I have salad in my teeth?
Yes, I would, Dave.
Okay, good. So
I promise you that.
Tell me if I'm saying something over and over.
Dave, you just told us
myself.
That story.
Yeah. That's
well,
good, Bob.
We'll get into more of this conversation. It's interesting stuff. But let's quickly take two.
Take two.
All right. Serena Williams is coming to town. She will be playing in the Fed Cup qualifier at Everett's Angel of the Winds Arena February 7th and 8th. The Seattle Times has reported you can buy tickets for just $30.
Dave, did you know that?
I did not know that. I bought my wife and I seats to the Fed Cup, it's called, up at Angel of the Winds Arena. And, yeah, Serena's going to be there. I get a chance to see her.
He had a Jim Moore
wait
moment.
Wait a minute. You bought the tickets before you knew that Serena Williams was coming?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
My wife is super into tennis, and I thought, what can I get her? I got her the treat dispenser that Bob
for the
shared
pets.
With me for the pets, and then I got her tickets to the tennis match.
And then in the sports pit before you got there, he was on his computer and goes, hey, I got tickets to Serena Williams. I'm like, oh, you're surprised that you got those.
But for $30 to be able to see Serena Williams?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and every seat at that arena is a good seat. So.
Oh, I wish I'd known that before I bought my tickets. They were a little more expensive than that. But.
All right, Jim's going to love this story. Janie McCauley, who covers San Francisco sports for the AP, said that she talked to Steph Curry. He confirmed that he is coming to Pullman this weekend for Klay Thompson's jersey retirement. He told her, I heard it's pretty cool there. And then she said he gave me a nice Go Cougs.
Oh, man. Oh,
he's now your favorite player outside of Klay Thompson, right?
I saw this news last night. Can you imagine? So they're playing Oregon State 1 o'clock on Saturday. And, yeah, to have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson there. Retire the number?
Not to bring it down, but didn't Clay get up in front of the entire stadium and apologize for some wrongdoing?
For smoking marijuana.
Is that
how
he did
dare
that?
He?
Yeah. That's amazing.
Why
that
would
he
you have
did
to bring that.
That
up now?
I know. I'm sorry. I said I don't mean to bring it down. No, I admire that. The kid made a mistake and he apologized to the entire arena. That took some onions to do that.
Yeah, and you know what else he said? So I saw a press conference that he had down there in Oakland with some of the Bay Area writers. I know we need to break, but this is more important.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is, and you'll know why. Because he said, if I had to do it over again, I'd go to Pullman again.
Yeah,
every day of the week.
I told you
it wasn't
important.
I got misty-eyed because I was thinking, man, I would go back to Pullman too. Never had a regret about going to Washington State University. Go Cougs.
Nobody thought
See,
that
wasn't
you did,
that
Jim.
Worth?
No, it wasn't. We're late. all right, coming up, how would you grade the Seahawks 2019 draft class? We're going to get into that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. A reminder that our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. Coming up at 4 o'clock, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program. Then 5 o'clock, Danny Kelly from The Ringer will join us to talk about a piece he just wrote on the Seattle Seahawks. Meanwhile, the 2019 draft class, we've talked about this, you know, kind of skimming the surface of it, but I think top to bottom, with maybe one real exception, you've got to feel pretty good about this draft class, right? I mean, we've talked about everybody has had a moment or two, three, some many more moments of contribution, whether we're talking about Metcalf or whether you're talking about Blair or Sua. You finally got to see him catch a ball in a game that, had yeah. meaning to it right. in a big moment. And you can go up and down from Cody Barton to Ben Burkervin to, you know, I would argue the biggest disappointment was your first pick,
yeah.
Jay Collier.
Well, I remember we went through that and looked at all the draft choices around him had some meaningful contribution, whether it was just, you know, starts or, you know, tackles and some of them in the end of the first round. Usually you see it drop off, but, you know, there was a lot of production from that first round class last year. So that, yeah, that was, and I'm just hoping, and that would entirely change my grade, because I would say this is a B. Last year I would have given him an A+, just because I thought what everybody except for what was the quarterback's name that didn't make it?
Magoo.
Yeah. So everybody pretty much other than him. And now, of course, Jacob Martin is gone because he was part of that Clowney trade, which I'd say makes him very valuable.
Yeah.
And but, you know, other than Collier, yeah, it was pretty good.
Gary Jennings. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just popped Jennings. Up there. He That's was their right. fourth round pick, and then DeMarcus Christmas is the other one.
Yeah, but he's still around, I believe.
Yeah, he's been injured, and Phil Haynes yeah. had been injured. He got thrown into the fire in this last game.
But I think what makes this class harder to judge is the fact that they didn't play that much. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I thought, you know, Travis Homer, we were talking about seeing him earlier on. Phil Haynes did play, but he was hurt. But, you know, I just thought I would have liked to have seen more Ugo Amadi, Marquise Blair, Travis Homer, and John Ursua. And we just mm-hmm. didn't see those guys that much.
And yet it's because you go back to we don't see practice, and so there was a reason they wouldn't put him out there. Right. I kept wondering about Amadi, especially based on his numbers at Oregon. He was clearly a playmaker down there in Eugene. Marquise Blair, especially with being a second-round pick and what you saw from him in August, a big hitter, and you thought, well, okay, he's going to get some time and never really did. Collier, we've talked about a bunch of times. What do you have, 152 snaps this year? Which was
3 tackles.
Yeah, which was more surprising, that he actually had 152 snaps or 3 tackles?
That was thanks to Danny Kelly's article, because yeah. I would have taken the way under on that number. If you said over or under 152 snaps, I would have been like, it's been like 40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet when I look up and down the draft picks that they made this year, you'd got one star. You got DK Metcalf. I mean, mm-hmm. that kid, I think everybody agrees, if he's not a star already, he's going to be a star. He's going to be one of the top 10. At least right now, you look at him and you go, man, he's only going to get better. And he had a 1,000-yard season, basically. He had the big game against Philadelphia. And you look at him and you go, okay, that guy could be a star. So sometimes when I look at these draft classes, yeah, you can rip on Gary Jennings or Schneider and say, what in the world did you see from that kid from West Virginia and didn't work out? But for every one of those kids, if you end up with a star like DK Metcalf, I consider it a successful draft class.
What grade would you give? Dave gives it a B.
Probably a B or a B minus, but Cody Barton could be a star in the making too. We'll find yeah. out in time. Most of these other guys I'm not so sure about, but at least with Metcalf and Barton, you got two guys you know you're going to be
able to. I mean, they all made the roster.
Yeah, so,
they all
yeah,
made the roster. Jennings. Well, and he was there for a while before they let him go, right?
Oh, is that right?
He was there for a while, and then they cut him, and then,
yeah.
and then the last second they
revert, pulled it back, rescinded, whatever.
Yeah.
So I mean, he technically had made the roster. How often does your entire draft class make the roster?
Right. Well, last year.
Yeah.
I mean pretty much. But yeah, Jennings. You know what's weird about that pick is that he had the most complete resume. I mean, he played like 53 games in college. He was productive every year. He was second team, all conference, all that. I mean, with DK Metcalf, he had the injury. And, you know, he didn't play, what he played in like 2 seasons, maybe 2.5. And, you know, and Ursua had a great resume too, but he also was kind of a shortened guy because he's older. He went on yeah. A Mormon mission. So, and I think he went to Italy is what he told us. But, yeah, so it was a pretty good one, but again, you go back to you just some of these guys I really would have liked to have seen more of. And Marquise Blair, they had the three safety defense that they ran a few times, and they had Lano Hill out there as the other safety. And I just thought Marquise Blair, remember, he caused – it didn't end up being a turnover, but he hit that San Francisco receiver, and the ball came loose.
They got
loose.
The ball back.
Yeah.
San Francisco did.
Yeah, they got it back. But he's just one of those guys that – is a hitter, and I think that that's what they need at that safety position, and that's what you got from Diggs. But I just wanted to see more of him, and yet they just didn't. They were reluctant to, you know, put the rookies out there as much as they have in the past.
Here's Pete Carroll giving his thought on the rookie class.
I thought they were really positive. It's a really positive assessment. All of them found a way to contribute at some time. Probably LJ needs, you know, the more opportunities to get him involved. But you know, look what DK did, I just think that Cody and BBK and those guys, they just helped us throughout the season. We counted on them early, and they factored in. Phillip Haynes, now that he's shown that he's going to be a factor too, I think Phillip's going to compete to play. And so if we make the progress with LJ, I think it's a fantastic group. I'm really going to be excited about what Johnny can bring in playing in the slot for us next year. He looked terrific during the second half of the season in all of the work that we did and the more time that he got with us. So I think he'll come back really competing for stuff. So pretty exciting group.
You know, this next draft, though, coming up, I heard Mike Salk talking with Tom, Jake, and Stacy yesterday. I'm with him on this one. If they have 12 picks, I want to see 10 of the 12 picks go toward the defense. And I just want to see that side of the ball get shored up. And maybe you could argue, well, they need to get another wide receiver, another offensive lineman. But I hope that most of the focus is on defense this year. The one player this year that really stood out too, well, I mean, DK Metcalf, Bart, and all these other guys we've been talking about. But John Ursua, he flashed some potential. We saw the catch against San Francisco. And, Bob, I'm going to ask you a question, even though you are the question man. I'm going to take your role for a second. Do you know why John Ursua is looking at as being a successful player in the NFL?
Why he's being looked at as a successful player?
Down the road.
Why?
Okay. It's because he had Nick Rolovich as his coach at Hawaii.
I was trying to
Nick Rolovich,
I should have
the new coach
at
Washington
connection.
State. He'll be introduced to everyone tomorrow at 2:30 there in Poland.
Boy, I missed that obvious connection. Yeah, if he's bringing it up, asking a question, it's got something to do with the Cougs.
Yeah, that's right. Am I that transparent?
Yes, you're just that consistent.
Well, and also usually Bob asks questions that can't be answered. And you asked a very easily answerable.
And I just, I missed the obvious in that whole thing. Dang it. All right. And you look, the draft class from the year before looks pretty decent when you go through and look at that. And Magoo's the only guy that didn't make it. And you got guys that are contributing from there. So it's they've done well. He touched on Collier. I know I'm picking on him, but I'm just really disappointed because they needed him.
Funny how Schneider's great lower in the rounds, but boy, up top, it hasn't been a banner for him at all.
Rashad
Penny has worked out.
Yeah. I mean, there was some question to that, but you haven't even talked about Michael Dixon either.
No, he was part of last year's draft. We can get into that. But meanwhile, Alex Cora is the latest casualty of the sign-stealing scandal, and Carlos Beltran going to be next? We're going to talk about that. This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program. We'll talk some more football with him. Meanwhile, the story in baseball is a big one. It is a big one. Alex Cora has been let go by the Boston Red Sox. Apparently it was a mutual decision, according to their ownership, and they had a press conference I saw this morning. We saw what happened with the GM and the manager in Houston. They're out. Carlos Beltran is the manager of the New York Mets, and it sounds like potentially he could be out before he even gets started. Here's Ken Rosenthal. A couple of different thoughts. First of all, on why the Red Sox chose to part ways with Cora.
Robert, he was mentioned, Alex Cora was, 11 times in that report. And as we originally reported in our story in The Athletic on November 12th, he was the mastermind. He was the mastermind, along with Carlos Beltran, of the Astros sign-stealing scheme. And for the Red Sox, going forward, they were in a difficult position. Here's Alex Cora, named in this report 11 times. Under investigation by baseball for sign stealing during the 2018 season. That's something we reported in The Athletic last week. And you've got a baseball writers' dinner coming up in Boston that manager generally attends. You've got a fan event coming up, the Red Sox annual winter event. They were going to have him trotted out publicly at these events, and it was not going to be an easy thing for them to address.
Now, he mentioned Carlos Beltran there, and then he goes on to talk about the focus will now shift to Beltran, who he called part of that the mastermind, him and Cora being the ones to come up with this.
Focus now, in my opinion, and I wrote this today, along with Evan Drellick of The Athletic, turns to Carlos Beltran.
Yeah.
Because Carlos Beltran had public statements after our initial story came out saying he had no knowledge of what went on, and yet the report from the commissioner, Rob Manfred, indicates that he clearly had knowledge and was part of the sign-stealing scheme. So the Mets are in the same position under pressure due to Beltran's comments and due to also what the Astros and Red Sox have done.
Hard to believe that not – I mean, isn't every player on the roster complicit? Are we to believe that there are some players that were just completely in the dark and didn't question why anybody's banging on the trash can? And you're sitting on the bench in there, aren't you going, hey, give me a break with that. What are you doing? I'm trying to focus on the game. You're over there smacking the trash can lid. Enough.
The rumors are out there already. I guess Beltran's niece is tweeting out that that her Uncle Carlos is going to be stepping down here shortly. So we're seeing all the chips fall after what happened there in Houston. And I don't even know what to, I can't believe that if you're the worst team in baseball and you're doing something like that, and like Dave's talking about with steroids, if you're a player that's just trying to hang on in the league, you'd go, well, okay, they're at least trying. But the Astros, you imagine what it's gonna be like when those guys come to T-Mobile Park this year, or wherever they go.
There are going to be signs, cheaters. Yeah. There'll probably be people holding trash can lids.
Yeah,
I
hope the guy that had the fishing rod for A-Rod, that he brings, you know, like this little miniature
trash can and starts. Yeah, I mean, they're going to get it, and they deserve it.
I don't know if you can fit those garbage cans in the one-by-one clear plastic bag that you're allowed to bring in. But, yeah, I mean, you'd think you'd see that. Do you look at this scandal as being kind of like yeah, remember the accounting scandal that went on when the market, you know, some of these big businesses were like writing off certain things, and they were just sort of,
was that the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac thing?
Yeah, sort of
that?
Pushing the envelope, and it just got worse and just kind of gradually got worse, and then all of a sudden it blows up. And, you know, a lot of it is stuff that's been going on for a long time, right? Like sign stealing, things like that.
But yeah.
But then when you start using technology and things, I just think it's funny at the end of the technology that there was banging on the garbage can.
That's very
high tech.
Well, and the other part of it is they did the research on it. The Astros had a better record on the road than they did at home. So
yeah,
what advantage were they getting?
Well, now people are talking about Altuve's go-ahead home run, and you know, you're looking at every moment of success at home, aren't you? This is what was going on at home. Oh. Well, how did they come up with this clutch hit here? What was going on here? Everything is suspect now. Doesn't mean they did it every moment of every game, but that now becomes the assumption. Well, why do you pick and choose where you do it? Are you telling us you only cheated in this one game over here and the other, you know, 81 home games that you or 80 home games you have, you didn't do it? I mean, it's
well. Do you think the penalties were enough? I thought they were pretty severe.
They were pretty severe, but I heard yesterday that financially they couldn't have been fined anymore. Apparently, that's the maximum. I know we had El Hombre on, and he was saying it should have been this and that. And I'm curious just about the entire team. I'm talking about Springer and Altuve and everybody else that's a member of this team. Are they absolved? Are we not? Are they not part of this? Because I refuse to believe that everybody didn't know about this.
Well,
they all knew.
Come Hall of Fame time, do you hold it against them? I mean, you look at their numbers, right, and you think, I mean, all these other guys you think are cheaters and steroid takers and Pete Rose, well, however you feel about it, but I would think that they would hold, you would look at them in the same way you would some of these other guys that you don't want in the Hall of Fame.
Well, and don't you think that there were some players that were like, hey, I don't want to be bothered with all that, just let me go up and get my at-bat. And
maybe.
You know, and so those guys are going to be tarnished.
Because you're complicit on some
right.
level. You didn't say anything. That's El Hombre's philosophy on steroids. If you played between this year and this year, and I don't remember the years he puts, he's like, you knew what was going on, you didn't say anything, you're part of it. You're part of the problem because you didn't say anything, which I'm not on board with.
As a player?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So I knew guys were taking
a blanket statement.
I never saw anybody injecting steroids into their buttocks, but you know, I played during that, and was I supposed to go and tell everybody, hey, these guys are taking steroids?
He's hard and fast rules with El Hombre, man. He's just like, that's how he views it. I don't view it that way. And I think there probably was some secrecy. I don't think every player on every roster knew that, oh, that guy's doing it for sure. That guy, I think mm-hmm. those guys were probably pretty private about it in a lot of instances. Whereas this, you're banging trash can lids in the dugout. Nobody's going to question that. You know what's going on.
And they must have known 100% of the time that they were going to be correct what pitches they were calling. Because, I remember talking to Daniel Vogelback last year, and he was saying he's always sitting on a fastball because you can react to a curveball. But if you're sitting on a curveball, you don't have the time to react to the fastball. And I was just thinking about, you imagine coming back to the dugout after the guy knows what pitch is coming and he still swings and misses?
Yeah.
All the grief that he gets from his teammates. Like, come on, man, you knew what was coming.
Yeah, I think everybody involved on that roster is guilty. I know we're isolating Beltran right now because he's a manager and Cora was the bench coach and all of that, but what about every player that was part of it, sending the signals and responding to them? I mean, you're all part of it. Nobody's innocent there. I'm sorry. I refuse to believe anybody was in the dark.
Oh, I think they all knew about it.
Yeah.
But so, I don't know. Do you penalize all of them?
Well, CC Sabathia is saying they should strip the title from him. And I don't disagree with him. I don't disagree with him.
Yeah.
If I'm a Dodgers fan, I'm really ticked.
I know it's terrible, but like I was saying earlier, I'm looking forward to when the Astros are on the road. Every single night when the Astros are on the road, especially when they're back on the East Coast, they're just going to let them have it. It's going to be fun.
They're going to let them have it.
It's going to be fun. It's going to spice up baseball this year.
And they're in the same division, so we're going to see them, a lot of them.
I kind of feel bad for their fans, right? You invest in them. You're walking around with your chest puffed up. We're the world champs, and now – how do you defend that? If you're an Astros fan, how do you argue with somebody about this?
I don't know. Let's ask Patriot fans.
I didn't say it.
Just kidding.
I didn't
just
say
kidding.
That. That was Dave Wyman.
I never even thought that the ball inflation thing was any advantage one way or the other.
He's trying to walk it back, Maura. He didn't mean he's trying to lessen the blow there. Wow.
I see you.
All right, coming up, the professor will join us on the program. We'll talk some NFL football with him, get his take on the draft class and everything else. That's next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.